So the question is, can these people fix this crisis? And this is, when I mean crisis, I mean in 2011, it was $100 million of a $800 million budget. San Jose is the 10th largest city in America. And that's pretty serious. And it's somewhat reflective of other challenges. Crawford, could you grab, this is one of my trained facilitators, Crawford Cremo. He's helping out today. I'm gonna say, hey, Crawford. So, and could we even do this through games? Could we actually do this through games? That's kind of a radical question. And you know, the idea of using games to solve problems is something that's growing. And I want to stress that we're talking about solving the problem. We're not talking about educating citizens through games. This isn't education. This isn't simulation. This is actually solving the problem through games. And that's a different kind of position that a lot of people in the serious gaming community or gaming community are taking. You're seeing a lot of gaming being built, like, hey, let's do more education games, which is great. But the question is, what is the problem you're trying to solve? Are you trying to solve the problem called learning, or are you trying to solve the problem called prioritize a budget and make cuts? That's the problem that we're trying to solve, and the question is, can we do it through games? And what you're going to learn is that what makes our stuff unique is that many of our games have, it's the same game both in person and online. So if you're doing something in person, you can have one of our games. But if you're doing something online at scale, you can use our games. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, Jane says that games solve problems through play. And to be a game, that we have these four elements, right? We have a goal, something to achieve. We have interaction rules that tell us how to behave with each other. We have arbitrary constraints in a number of dimensions, and we have voluntary participation. And so the question of could citizens do this gets interesting to me, because there's a whole set of serious games that are out there that people are building, right? There are adver games that try to get you to buy stuff, and news games and simulations and extra gamings, and then our games. And so the question would be, could our experience in business be applied to the civic engagement sector or government sector? So what we do in my company is we create purpose-driven or serious games that are used to solve strategy, product management, and marketing and sales problems in big companies. And we play them with customers primarily, and sometimes with internal stakeholders. A highlight of our games is that they are always played in small group formats. So a single game is 5 to 8 players, and then you'll see if you want to scale, then you have multiple games. So if you want 800 people playing games, then we would play 100 games with 8 people per game. And that way we have maximum collaboration and maximum interaction in a group size. Now that creates some challenges to applying these techniques that we can talk about how to overcome. Now, keep in mind that we're still in the question phase. Like, could our games work? And what would suggest that we have games and experience that would help us solve this problem for governments? Well, we have a lot of clients. And we're kind of a company that is a funny company, because we don't have as much press, as you will, in some of the other gaming companies, because we're not primarily a consumer-driven play. So we're not out there trying to get a lot of press around our games to get people to play it on Facebook, because our customers typically don't interact with customers on Facebook, right? So Cisco is one of our clients. Recently, we completed a project for Cisco where we were prioritizing features of a new product with CIOs. So Cisco has this group of CIOs. They want them to prioritize the features. They use a certain game to do that called Buy a Feature. So you can kind of see that we're used to working with big organizations who have very complex problems and who want to solve them through play. And we feel that this gave us the foundation on which to try and work with a very large organization, the City of San Jose, and engage citizens through play. So what was the real problem? And we often work with our clients to help them kind of situate the context of their problem. And I'm grossly simplifying innovation processes here, but it's not an unreasonable simplification, right? Most innovation is you start, get some ideas, shape them, prioritize them, move to execution. And we have games that go across this life cycle. And when we're working with the city, we were trying to understand initially, well, what is the real problem you're trying to solve? Do you want to get ideas from citizens? Or do you really want to work on prioritization of the budget? It turned out that the city didn't feel that they needed new ideas. They were in such a big hole that they had to work on prioritization, get us out of the hole. So we chose prioritization, right? I want to determine voter priorities. Now, we have three games that are tuned for the concept of prioritization, and they work in slightly different ways. My background is a funny mix of cognitive psychology, organizational behavior, and computer science. So it's those are the things that drive us to create our games as opposed to kind of traditional game design activities. And if you, here's my cheap gratuitous plug. If you get my book, ta-da, you will find that the book describes how each game works from the perspective of cognitive psychology and organizational behavior. Each game is also described on our website, so you wouldn't have to get the book. But this game works on more of a benefit approach. This game is based on time horizons, where if you think about the growing of a tree, it grows over time, and we use the growth over time as a time horizon perspective to understand priorities. And this game uses virtual markets, and it has really interesting qualities from the perspective of behavioral economics. So the way Buy a Feature works, and we ended up choosing this game, is you take 12 to 20 items, and they're described in terms of benefits and costs. And then 5 to 8 players are assembled in a group. We give them, on average, in a corporate environment, 40% of the total. So if the total amount of money is $2,000, we would give 8 players $100 each, right? $2,000 times 40% is $800. Distribute that evenly among the players. Here's your $100. And then we simply turn the game on and say, buy what you want. But what's interesting about the game is that you don't typically have enough money to get what you want. So you have to collaborate with other players to buy the most interesting stuff. So if one of the items is $200, you have to get at least one other person to collaborate with you to get it. And we look at who collaborates with whom and what they say. He has grunt once for yes, twice for no. Okay, because it is the morning. Right? This means no, this means yes. This means work. It's just, right? Now, this game we've been playing for over a decade in corporate America. And it matches kind of the rational way that corporate America tends to prioritize. They have a list of projects. They want to narrow that list down. So to scale this game, what we do is we create tournaments. So let's say you have 60 items in your project portfolio. We'll take it up into 4 games of 15, and then the winners advance. And by the way, all of my stuff is really public. Everything I'm saying is on SlideShare. You can get all sorts of stuff about how we do what we do. But we take those projects and we narrow down that portfolio. And then because each game only takes an hour, we run multiple tournaments across a company or with customers. So we've got a fair amount of experience, and we're thinking, gosh, wouldn't this work for government? Well, it turns out the government is very interested in this because we get 3 really great results. The obvious result is the list of items. The reasons behind the ranking is the next most critical result. So when I'm arguing with William here in the front row and I'm trying to convince him to join me in buying something, I cannot help but reveal my intentions and preferences. So you take a survey, like a forced rank survey, and it says, you know, allocate your money across these items. You do it. Or you take a conjoint analysis and you pick what you like, but you don't have to justify why your choice was made. In our games, you have to negotiate to get what you want. And the act of negotiation is convincing someone to join in with you to get that thing. Are you with me on that? It's a really subtle point. More importantly, the act of negotiation gives feedback that shapes the product. And it's that feedback that makes the product features better, the projects better, or in our government case, the government. So, and the true story behind all of this is 3.5 years ago, I met Kim Walesh from the city of San Jose on a plane ride from San Jose to Dallas. And if you have to sit next to me for an entire plane ride, you're going to learn about games. And she is the chief economist and head of strategy for economic development in the city of San Jose. And by the other part of the story is it took 1.5 years to convince the city of San Jose to do this, right? Because everyone goes, oh, games? Yeah. Oh, can't play games about serious topics. I'm like, yes, we can. Finally, they relented and let us do this. But what we learned is the way that governments manage their budgets is completely unlike the way our corporate clients manage our governments. So the corporate clients say, here's my money, here's my list, prioritize the list, apply money until I'm done, right? Then I run out. Not at all how governments prioritize. And I don't have a good slide on this, but the way I frame it, and it's not equal thirds, but conceptually, the city government is in thirds. One third you don't test because it's mandated by law that is outside of your control. The federal government says you got to do this, or the state government says you got to do this. And part of what we've learned in market research is our games are so powerful that we have to be very careful to only test things that people will take action against. So we're not going to test this part of the government, this part of the budget with citizens, because the government can't act on it. Even if the citizen said, I don't want to do X, it's a federal law. They don't get a choice. So we take that away. The next chunk is the part that the city needs to sustain itself. So we did some test runs, and what we found were things that people would say, oh, the city doesn't need an HR department or a legal department because those don't help our roads. Well, that's not true, right? Cities do need a legal department, and a big city does need HR. I mean, we have to have these functions to have the entity sustain itself. So we take those off the list. And we worked really hard to get to that list of items that could be tested and acted against. But the city's in a deficit. So we had to redesign the concept of the game. So what we came up with was a version of Buy a Feature that we now call budget games. And I want to stress all of this material is available for you on our website. We've got kits. We've got 3 more books up here. You can do this on your own. We can help you and if you want to do this on your own. The way it worked is we created funding proposals. Now, keep in mind that in a normal government, the way the city thinks of funding itself is they just take all the programs from last year and carry them forward to the next year. It's not quite the same in business, right, where we don't automatically carry everything forward. In businesses like my Adobes and my Ciscos and my corporate clients, Rackspace, those people don't just carry things forward. They reprioritize all the time. In government, they tend to take last year, move it forward to this year, and move it forward again. So the way that we framed the game to the citizens is we said, we want you to imagine that these items have been cut from the budget. Imagine that these items are gone. And over here, there are reduction proposals. If you agree as a set of citizens to these, the amount of money will go into each of your hands and you can buy what you want. So you have to cut to fund. And now if you actually looked at a higher level, what we were testing is these were parks and rec primarily. These were police and public safety primarily. And the question was, would citizens actually do things like reduce the number of fire truck people in the fire truck to bring back parks and rec? Those were, and I mean, when I want to talk about the, I'll bring this up in a bit, but I also want to point out the difference between a game and a serious game is that in a game, you're not materially affected by the outcome. In a serious game, you are materially affected by the outcome. So I can't let you feel this because if I brought these sheets in and I said, oh, try it out and see what it feels like, you wouldn't play very hard because you're not residents of San Jose. It does not affect you. When you see these items and you're making a choice between reducing the number of people in the fire truck from 5 to 4 to fund the library in your neighborhood, this is a very serious choice. Are you with me? So it's a radically different concept to know that the outcome of the game is materially affecting you and your life. Now, notice the rules of the game, because it's a subtle rule, and I'm going to bring it up more than once. To enact a budget cut, the group had to agree unanimously. Once a budget cut was agreed to, the facilitator split the money to the people, and then you buy what you want. So if you get enough money to do what we call a solo purchase, you could. You don't have to collaborate if you have enough money. Now, some of the items in here were very expensive, so even if you made some of the bigger cuts, you would likely collaborate. So far with me on that? That's a really important point about how the psychology of our games produces these great results. Now, the other thing is that to manage the interaction among the group, we have 7 people in a group, we have 1 trained facilitator and 1 trained observer at each table, plus floating people, plus subject matter experts. So to minimize bias in the results, my team of, and we've got Crawford being one of them, we've got a team of 600 facilitators around the world. Our team is trained not to answer questions about the content. We explain the rules of the game and keep the game flowing and draw information out. Tell me why you put half your money on that item. Why is that so important to you? Like, we'll ask questions like that. But to minimize researcher bias, we did the very fancy signaling mechanism of taping red plates to paint stir sticks. And when a question was raised, the facilitator would raise this, wave it, and then the appropriate subject matter expert from the city came to answer the question. So when citizens had a question, what would be the true impact to the city of reducing the fire people in the fire truck from 5 to 4? Fire Chief McDonald answered the question. Jane Knight, the head of libraries, answered questions about closing libraries. The lieutenant of the police force was there in the room to answer the questions. So we had the subject matter experts in the room. You guys with me on that? That's a really important point, because the citizens become engaged and the city becomes engaged. And we're helping create civic engagement. Well, that is a small group. So we had roughly 100 citizens across 12 tables. Each table had 7 citizens and 2 facilitators. That was in 2011. In January of 2012, we asked the city to rent out the entire San Jose Convention Center so we could pop that up to 2,000 citizens. We couldn't secure the space in time. But next year, we're going to hope to do 2,000 to 4,000 citizens in person. And then that's why we want to do our online games, so that we can continue to scale. How do we fill the room? Let me jump ahead. This is a really great question. So who played? You're asking the question, who played? In this particular, and so you can kind of get a sense of the room there. The people who played, in this particular case, they were the elected officials of the neighborhood associations. Who would normally attend this meeting, and then there was a youth commission and then other noted citizens. Now, one thing that we did also do is, because of the geographic nature of governance, we made sure that people had to register, and then we made sure that each district in the city had only one person at a table, so that cuts couldn't be like, there couldn't be like this geographic ganging up on. But this is why we seek to go online, right? We seek to go online so that we can get, you know, it would be great to have 100,000 out of 1 million residents playing games online. And we think we can do that. But it's part of building the trust. You know, we did one more thing. We did this in 2011. And people said it was a fluke, right? Even though the results were great. We did it again this year. We got great results. And now people are like, hey, this works. So I think that within the next year or two, we'll get there. And then, just so you know what my personal goal is, is 200 million Americans playing online games in small groups on entitlement reform, creating a data set that the people have created and the people own, and therefore not changing the structure of government, but changing the sense of civic engagement. And if we can do that, then we can return to a place where we can allow citizens to engage more directly with their officials without special interests getting in the way. And then we can take the data that we collect and we can subject different companies' algorithms to the data to see if there are mistakes or get the insight. So my goal is to create kind of this public data set of sentiment of opinions that other companies then analyze, and then we can start to argue about the analytics. But that's the longer term goal. It's really important that subject matter experts answer questions. This is the team. I'm also very proud to say that we've, between last year and this year, we've contributed more than $250,000 of pro bono services. So this was done, again, this was to make the results as believable as we could. This, we charged absolutely nothing to the city. Now, I don't know if we can sustain that, but nothing, not a dime.
So the 2011.
Right. I'm going to talk about 2011 or 2012 in a bit, but I wanted to start with 2011. Right.
So it was like sort of the usual suspect kind of dynamic of people
with. Yeah, I would say that these people do have a history with the city, and in fact, some of them are smarter than the elected officials because of their history. It's really interesting.
Yeah, but with the neighborhood representations, I understand. So you were doing also in. Had a demographic accurate representation
been
present?
Or? No, you guys are asking really good questions that's going to lead us towards statistical significance, and we're not there. I'm not going to claim that the representatives of our games were representative demographically of the city. For example, the city of San Jose has a very significant Vietnamese population, and I'm not going to claim that the players in that room were representative of that population. But I will claim that our results are, from a qualitative research perspective, are far more actionable than comparative results. Yeah, we're not where we want to be yet. Well, not only that, but this is building that trust, right?
That's a huge challenge.
Right. That's why all of you are going to become trained facilitators. And we teach it, you know, for reduced cost, because what we're trying to build is this army of people who are willing to do this work. And in this year, to give you a sense of how powerful this becomes, we had facilitators fly on their own dime from New York, Phoenix, Portland, Denver, Reno, just to be a part of this. And so hopefully, you know, you're from Dayton, right? It's not. I can tell you, I got 100 trained facilitators within 100 miles of Dayton. They would descend, right? And they would help you out. So this is the actual results. Now, we did percentages, although everyone in the room knows that these are not statistically significant across the population of San Jose. They're just used for comparisons. But San Jose citizens chose pavement maintenance over libraries. And that really is radical. And now, I'm a researcher, right? So I'm trained to not think anything is radical, because I don't know what's radical in a given domain. Mayor Reed of San Jose came up to me after the events and we handed the results. He said, "Do you realize how radical and powerful these things are?" And I said, "Tell me more." And he said, "If the city of San Jose even thinks about closing a library, the Friends of Libraries come out in force. But there's no Friends of Pavement. And our pavement is deteriorating. And the fact that our citizens chose pavement maintenance over libraries is a radical result." And part of it's because of the design of the game, right? This is the comparative, and you get to see this. So planning our first game took 3 months. I do not want to dissuade you at how hard this is going to be. And when I started working with the San Jose, most of the time when we start, like on our first play test of the game, they had items like, "Let's reduce police costs by 10% to save $1.2 million. And I said, "No, you can't do that, because all you're doing is you're deferring the decision of what the actual choice will be, and citizens will easily go for it. There's no impact." So we had to work with the city budget office over a couple of months to convert every one of these to eliminate the police helicopter program to save $1.2 million. Just a sec. Let me do one thing here that I think would be useful, and when we've got time for this, I want to give you an example from 2011 of exactly what the reduction proposal form looked like. Oh, no, that's 2012. Sorry. And I know it's kind of hard to read what's going on here. Can you actually read that in the room? Okay, so you can see the proposal is reduced by five. So it's very precise, reduced by five precision. It tells you what the current service is. It tells you what the proposal description is. And it tells you what the budget is. So we had to work with this in the city to properly prepare for each one of these. And then the funding proposals, and these again are all online for you, is organized this way. And again, I apologize if it's not, the font isn't right. But maintain six positions, right? If you fund this, if you do not fund this, and the actual costs. So this is what citizens were actually playing with. I forgot my money, but we had fun with the money, but we printed up money.
So the previous one is a number that would be reduced. This is a number that you would add.
That's correct. If your team of seven citizens said, we will eliminate the helicopter program, the facilitator took $1.2 million, divided it by seven, and distributed it to everyone, right? So you take your 150.
You're actually passing around play money, doing it.
Yes, and this is really important for the psych. This is hugely important for the psychology. It must be paper money, and it cannot be poker chips, and it cannot be something that you don't touch and feel. It has to induce the right behavior among the players. There's my behavioral economist in the back. To induce the right behavior, it has to be play money. And we have tested all sorts of stuff. We've tested poker chips. We've tested. Now, your fallback position, if you don't have time to print money, is Monopoly money or Game of Life money. We buy it in packs. These crazy tables. I mean, you can see. I don't know if you can see it there. There's an example of a citizen with their actual physical dollars. Now, I'm going to tell you that there was an unexpected result in San Jose. And it truly changed my life, and it gave me the power to keep going. The way we structured the event was we did the game for an hour and a half, and it's going to take you about an hour and a half to play. And we had a half-hour debrief with citizens. Crawford, could you get me a water or a coffee? Thanks. the citizens talked about their experience, and a woman stood up from what I was told later was the worst neighborhood of San Jose from a gang perspective. And so she's coming from a very disadvantaged background. And she stands up and she takes the microphone and she said, you know, I came to this event 2 years ago. It was so bad. I didn't come last year. This year I'm here. And she said, I just want to tell you that this was the most meaningful experience I've ever had with my government. And then we kind of listened in and she said, and she started to cry. Not fully cry, but get teared up. And she said, I had the same amount of money as everyone else at my table. And when we made a cut, I got the same amount of money to make a choice. Thank you so much. And I want you to really be with that for a minute. This is a woman who does not feel her vote matters like your vote. But in our game, she felt equal. Because she was given the same amount of money. For the first time in her life, she was on equal footing about economic choice. I mean, that really, it just blew us all away. I mean, the whole room just went, boop. It was amazing. Okay, this is an overview of the sequence of planning. Now, the city did provide the space. So I don't want to say that we paid for everything. The city provided City Hall, and they provided lunch to the participants. But that was part of their normal budget. Everything else we took care of. We talked about this. Any questions on this before I move on?
So you're saying it was an hour and a half play, half hour...
Debrief. Yeah, and then the dignitaries who start the event, like, they'll talk for a few minutes. And then Mayor Reed...
People showing up at the door to people leaving was, like, a half day?
A half day.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Door facilitators arrive at 7 a.m. Doors open at 8:30. Participants come. Day starts at 9. Dignitaries talk for about a half hour. We play from 9:30 to 11. Do a half hour brief from 11 to 11:30. Dignitaries talk again, and then we have a box lunch. So it's a plan a half day.
So was there any pre-work
for the participants? No, we chose not to, but you'll see later on that that's probably something we'll want to do a little bit more of, is pre-work. Pretty much, yeah. Pre-work is a tricky thing as you're designing events because you can put people in an uneven position on pre-work, and so you want to be very careful about your pre-work. And by the way, that is Mayor Reed of San Jose. Any other questions on this before I keep going? All right. So the key results. The city made budget choices in alignment with our games. And not one, many. They reduced fire department staffing. They reduced police department. They did reduce the number of fire of personnel in the fire truck from 5 to 4. They did cut police positions. They did delay libraries. They did eliminate some services, and they funded some. They kept some things on the block funded, like anti-graffiti and children's health.
So the Fire Police Association unions were on board. That this was
The sequence of the budget in San Jose is that the budget comes out in July, so we played our games in January to give evidence to the negotiating process with the pensions or the unions and things like that. That this gave the city confidence that they could go there and get that done. Now, this is let me particularly choose the fire truck because in 2011 we tested moving from 5 to 4. And in 2012, we tested moving from 4 to 3. In 2011, 5 to 4 was overwhelmingly in support because the fire chief and the fire union had to admit that the standard in California is 4. So reducing from 5 to 4 was perceived as not to be putting citizens at risk. Moving from 4 to 3 is below the standard, but still acceptable in many cities, and yet it wasn't chosen. So these citizens are when you can get them engaged, you're amazed at what they know. And not surprisingly, citizens love the process, to be engaged and interactive, communicating with other citizens, et cetera. Now, we pushed boundaries in 2012. I am a computer scientist, and so there's only one book I claim that you ever need to know about software if you do a lot of software. It's called The Mythical Man Month by Fred Brooks. It's this amazing book. And in the book, one of the truisms that Brooks talks about is it's called the second system effect. And what Brooks says is the second thing that you do is always the most dangerous because the first one, you're unsure of yourself, so you do a lot of planning, and it comes out great. And the second time, you're like, I know what I'm doing. And I'm always I'm smiling, right? And so you'd cut corners or you push boundaries. So this time the city of San Jose was like, well, let's really push the boundaries. And of course, this year we spent most of the time reining the city back in because they were so excited about what we were doing. But I agreed to 3 significant changes because we have some experience of this in our corporate clients. One is we tested – it's funny. Government employees never talk about – they never use the word tax. They always say we're raising revenue. And as a citizen, I'm like, isn't that a tax? Oh, no, not quite, Luke. It's revenue. I'm like, okay, it seems like taxes. It's a fee. It's not a tax, right? So it's okay. And by the way, you guys should know very clearly, I hope you will never know if I'm a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or a Tea Party or Occupy or whatever. I don't fear Democrats or Republicans or Libertarians or Tea Party or Occupy or whatever. I fear the citizenry that has lost the ability to communicate with each other. That's what I fear. That's what we're going to fix, right? So we tested new taxes. We tested buy one or none proposals, which is a more sophisticated form of our game. But the way it works is you can say you can get this or this, but not both. And one of the things we wanted to test was pavement maintenance. You could go for 17 or 18. Right, maintain fair or move fair to good. These were huge numbers, $32 million and $64 million. And each table could add one new funding proposal. We call these write-in candidates. So each table could add one new proposal. So it worked great. First, we found that there was strong support for taxes, provided that the taxes were funding pavement maintenance. So in 2012, 8 tables funded pavement maintenance, 7 through a parcel tax, 1 through the sales tax. So the residents really get that their pavement quality has deteriorated to a point that's completely unacceptable. And if they don't make investments now, it's going to be horrific in terms of cost. We also found that the police field patrol was felt to go one click down. Now, we are qualitative researchers, meaning we give opinions. So I wanted to give you our actual unedited report of the 5 key things we took as market researchers to the city. The livability were very important. They demonstrated a strong increase, but no matter what happened, no matter what table raised taxes or how they raised taxes or how they did cuts, tables that did enact the sales tax spent significantly less money as a sign of fiscal prudence, which we always find interesting. This happened again in 2011. Almost every table did not spend all the money that was available as a signal to the government that's serving them. They generated 5 unique funding proposals, which was really fun, and then they wanted more games. At the end, I said, does anyone have anyone else? And someone goes, do you have any games about growth? Because we're tired of cuts. It turns out we do. And I said, we do. And then I said to the group, I said, do you guys want to do another round of this? And like literally every hand went up. So we're getting the engagement, and that's really exciting. Now, go ahead. They raised the tax, but they didn't spend all of the money. So the tax here was $36 million, and you can see that 6 of the tables raised $36 million. Of those 6 tables, they didn't spend anywhere close to $36 million. The average of unspent money from agreeing to that tax was $12 million. Right, and then they kept on saying, well, we want to have a smaller tax. Can't we do a half, an 8 cent? And again, no. By law, if you do a sales tax, it must be in quarter cent increments. So we find that was part of the design of the game, because when we were playtesting it, that happened in playtesting, and so the citizens started to realize, like, wow, we create this negative cycle where we don't let ourselves make smaller increments in tax. Like, now we have this extra money, $12 million, and that's going to be this incentive to spend it. So it was this really interesting discussion and dynamic about how this was done. Now, I cannot tell you how powerful it is to have people negotiate for an hour and a half before they raise a tax. One of the tables, I think it was table H that did the sales tax, they argued for 85 of the 90 minutes before they agreed to the tax. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, from the observers in the room, we know that there was a specific demographic who were there attending this, but you said that people were already involved in it, so you may have had other voices in the community that may not have been present.
Oh, well, I can guarantee there were important voices in the community that were not present.
Yeah.
Yeah, in market research terms, those are called dominators, and the answer is dominators tend to not have a hold in our games because of the economic power of the money. Meaning, once I give you your $500,000, she can try and dominate you, but you still have control of your own money, and the facilitators will point that out. So part of the trick is. And she's asking a very powerful question, because in many small focus group kind of things, dominators do dominate. That's why they're called dominators. But if you can dramatically neutralize the effect of a dominator through the act of the money. Now, one of the things I promised was, why are budget games better than what I call budget puzzles? And there's a lot of these budget puzzles out there, right? Well, here's the key dimensions, and I'm going to go this quickly. These guys will tell you that we want to educate you on the problem. I think that's great. But people don't—they don't track the results. There's no action being taken by elected officials. More importantly, the impact of the choices is none. So if you actually look at some of the results of these people, it's like they always balance the budget because it doesn't affect you. It's a puzzle, and the goal of the puzzle is to balance the budget. In our games, being silly is not okay. Being goofy in Monopoly is fine. Unless you're playing my brother, and then, you know, he'll take your money. But being goofy in our games is not fine because you are affected by the choices you're making. So there's a whole set of things, right? And of course, both techniques have biases. We do our best to reduce the biases, but you can't eliminate bias. You can compensate for bias. We have so many opportunities to improve. We've done a lot of post-processing. We can improve preparation. One idea is to distribute the proposals in advance, make them more accessible. That puts the city on the hook to get things done earlier. And if you think about the city, they're trying to late bind the information as long as possible so that they can have the most current information. So it's a little bit of a trick there. We want to solicit the citizen proposals in advance. We definitely want to use more tech. We have online games. We want to extend them. I'll talk about that. And we want to create more opportunities to continue the conversation. Some notion of social that is yet done. So we have a lot more games, right? We have three other games that would be appropriate for cities. We've got Prune the Product Tree, which is a game about evolution and growth. We've got an online version of Buy a Feature. And we've got a game called Product Box, where you, and when we work with clients, we have them build a box and then sell it. And if we have time later on, I've done some tests in my class where I've said, build a box that would sell the city of San Jose to small businesses. And then people stand up and actually embody the city of San Jose as a product and sell it. And it's pretty interesting. And it's pretty exciting. I'm not sure I understand the question, but I'll answer what I think you're asking, and if I get it wrong, you'll help me out. My games are in my book, so you guys can pick them up, use them as you see fit. There's a carefully designed intellectual property strategy that says the term Innovation Games is a registered trademark. That's the brand that we're trying to push around the world. The actual names of the games are not registered trademarks, and that's specifically because if you wanted to change the name from Buy a Feature to, you know, Budget Games, you could. The in-person games are completely free. The online games do come at a license. And if you're, you know, Mass Mutual or Rackspace or one of my other corporate clients, I'm going to charge you for it. I'm the CEO of a completely bootstrapped company in Silicon Valley, which means I don't have VCs telling me what to charge. So if you are going to use this for philanthropic purposes, chances are I know someone who can comp you a license and would be honored to do that. Did that answer the question? Okay. So let's talk about Prune the Product Tree in the few minutes that we have left. This is, you draw a tree, you use your current ideas from your roadmap, a product roadmap, think product before you think city, because that's what we do. You get people to shape the growth, and then they talk about it in the concept of time. Well, this is what we're doing right now. We're planning a set of online games, and our goal to this lady we want to get to the next step, somewhere between 4,000 and 8,000 residents. So 1,000 to 2,000 online games. That's our goal, the next step. So we're going to do Prune the Product Tree. In this game, we have online. I have a net connection. I could show you Prune the Product Tree online right now. Where think of a tree, and think of it as a visual wiki. If you put an item on it, he can edit it, and she can change it and move it, and it all happens in real time. And we don't use Flash because we want to honor ADA accessibility requirements with screen readers and things like that. So it's all pure HTML, just pure HTML. And the idea here is that we're going to use this to identify community service projects. And taking a step back, there's another philosophical underpinning. I'm not a fan of the notion that we are customers of our government. I get that I'm customers of a car company. I don't get that I'm a customer of my government because I am a part of my government. So we like citizenry. So the idea is we're going to create projects, people are going to shape them, and then they're going to prioritize them. But here's the trick, and again, from my behavioral economist, a virtual market works on any limited economic resource. Time is our other most limited economic resource. So the players of these games are going to see projects for community service, like paint a community center, but the cost will be the hours required from the community to get that done. Players will bid their time for the project. So if the project of painting the community center requires 400 community service hours, over repeated gameplay, we will see if we can get... And then you can have minimum bid chunks, right? So you might say, I need 4 hours from a person on a weekend to be part of this, and I need 200 community hours. We will see if we can get people contributing their time. And we have evidence in our playtesting to suggest that when a citizen sees another citizen start to make a public commitment of their time, other citizens join in. Once we know that the project is funded by time, the city will kick in the seed funding up to, I think, they've got money for $5,000 or $1,000 per project for materials. So rather than trying to get money and then get citizens, we're going to get citizens and then get money. Okay, so we want to engage millions of Americans, and I promise that I talk about some of the challenges. Here's some of the challenges, right? Our platforms work really well for business. We've got a lot of nice corporate clients. We're doing good. But we need different enrollment on and authentication. The reason Cisco comes to me for online games is because we can go around the world. But the reason a city would come to me is because they would have some reasonable evidence that the person playing the game is from the city that they're in. So that changes our notion of enrollment. It changes our notion of identification and authorization. And there are ways to do that. We also are worried about how do we allow and protect for free speech in a game that is emotionally driven by what you want? So let's say that you're a member of a religious, and I'm going to use California, let's say that you're a member of a religious organization that does not approve of gay marriage, but you personally do. How would you play in a game that would let your personal opinion be expressed without being subjected to negative public sentiment? Because when you go in the voting booth, that's private. Now, this is a lot harder than you think. This is, you might say, oh, Luke, allow anonymous game players. Great, but that's not how human emotion works in the middle of a game. And so, honestly, what we're doing right now is we're punting on anything that we think can't be discussed openly until we get a little bit more experience. We want to coordinate massive numbers of players. So we have this notion of a subject matter expert. We know how to handle subject matter experts in large physical spaces. How would we do a subject matter expert pooling online? And there's coordination. It's doable, but we'd have to work at it. And then, of course, we still need to minimize bias. I think these are fairly well done in the sense of they're not inherently biased, but that doesn't mean that there isn't bias in them. So if we did like a Wikipedia of the content to what the games are, we would solve the problem of getting the content to the citizens earlier, but also hopefully minimizing bias about how the things are described and what they're holding.
Can you promote national issues forum?
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, the national issues forum doesn't end up putting content in the form that's appropriate for play.
But I'm just saying that there's the people that are engaged in that.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
A lot of background material that you might mine.
And we will try. Okay, that'd be great. That would be great. So what about gamification, right? So gamification are the people who are saying, take a task that you don't really like to do, and we'll make it fun by adding game elements, like points and badges and leaderboards, and then we'll like get this great result. And it's extremely Pavlovian, and it's not inherently based on true motivation of a person. It's inducing motivation. It's not true motivation. And I want to point out that in everything I talked about, did you hear the word point, badge, or leaderboard in any of what I said? No. What you heard was engagement that produces amazing results. And that's what a game will do. Now, I'm not trashing the gamification community. I know them. Many of them are my friends. I understand them. They're very nice people. Over time, we may in fact add some of these concepts to our budget games. We may. One idea that we've toyed with is having citizen skill levels in play. So you start with a simple game, and then by playing the simple game, we've seen that people get educated, and maybe you play a more complex version of the same game. Maybe. I'm not sure that's right, but it's a promising area of research. Yeah. Not familiar with America's Elect at all.
Okay, well, they're using the badges and the stats and the points and all that stuff.
And you know what? If it really engages citizens and it moves forward, then I'm going to say excellent. But I'm not convinced that that would cause Mayor Reed and his staff to eliminate the helicopter program and save the city $1.2 million of the $100 million that they have to save. And think about the impact that we're trying to have. We're not talking about like, hey, we had a good time. I'm talking about, can we actually make a cut on the results? 10 minutes. All right. Okay, what about participatory budgeting? Again, we're really excited about participatory budgeting. There's some people in the participatory budgeting movement who would say that what I have done is a kind of participatory budgeting. Give me thumbs up. There are other people who would say that because the citizens are not in direct control of the budget choices, it's not yet fully realized participatory budgeting. I'm actually a little bit more on that side. I'm not claiming that what we're doing is full out participatory budgeting, but I think that our techniques are complementary and will move us down that line. Can one company, can my little six-person bootstrap company pull this off? Well, let's look on the S side. We've got this global network, we've got proven results, and we've got city leaders trusting us. So I'll put it in yes column. And then the reality is, of course, no. There's no way we can get 200 million Americans in playing games with a six-person company. Unless people like you help us. Unless we find a way to get this done. And to improve our chances for success, we're going to create a nonprofit this year. We're in the works of this. We're not entirely sure of the name, so I'm not going to say what it is. We're testing out a couple of names. But we're going to try and focus on creating a nonprofit that would enable us to continue to move forward. If you want to get involved here, I'm going to load this up into SlideShare now that I finished it last night. But this is what we did, and I've got like 6 or 7 minutes for questions, and I'm ready to be peppered with anything you got.
Take any of these suggestions and
actually implement them that the citizens came up with? For the new proposals in
2012? For the cuts and tax raises and all that stuff, did the city actually take any of that stuff and put it into effect?
Well, I really want to stress that in 2011 they did. Absolutely, and these are the things that they did in 2011. In 2012, the budget is still being negotiated, so send me an email in June and I'll let you know. But I would say that the city has, what they've told us is, given the sentiment of these community leaders for increasing taxes to improve maintenance, they're likely to put something into the budget about increasing taxes to improve pavement maintenance. Not clear yet what that will be. Oh, absolutely.
Just a little to getting some of the other, I build a probably a support budgeting tool in that way. One of the challenges is trying to get the non-engaged citizenry into that process. You know, you're talking about having elected leaders from each of different districts. And what I see is the most engaged citizenry, you know, parents are concerned about parent issues and, you know, teachers' meetings and sort of. Swath of, you know, other people who are not engaged in the process at all. I'm curious to hear about like, how you talk about being able to bring.
Yeah, so you know, there I live in Sunnyvale. I have a block in Sunnyvale, and you know, how do we get people engaged? Right. I think this is the challenge in our democracy. I don't want to change the structure of our democracy. I want to change its engagement and its participation. I think that. Because our society has changed so much, it's not convenient for us to go down to a hall on a Saturday or a community garden on a Sunday because our lives are too complex. The question is, can serious games that you could play at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night or 8 o'clock on a Tuesday when you don't feel like watching reality junk TV with other citizens, could we make that happen? I think we can, and that's the mechanism we're going to go after. I don't know exactly how to do that, right? To be blunt, I can't convince my PTA to do this. I'm like, we'll do it for free, man. Oh, it's games. We did it for San Jose. Oh, I know, but they're different. Really? How? Really? Tell me how they are different. So I think if you want to take any of this work on, you just have to say, you know, your time horizon is your lifetime, because that's what it's going to take. You just got to be in service for the rest of your life. That's my time horizon, right? I'm doing the Toyota planning model, right? There's two time horizons in Toyota, in your lifetime and beyond your lifetime. I don't have a good answer for that. But I think that these kinds of results, the world is changing. Millennials will change this if no one else will. Let me go with this guy because he hasn't said anything yet. You can't have a subject matter expert respond any other way than they're going to respond. They're not trained that way. They're trained to be the chief of police or the chief of fire. What you can at least do is put more than one subject matter expert in the room and have, you know, the citizens themselves at times are pretty smart at being watchdoggy about the government. America's cultural heritage is being distrustful of government. We broke from a government that we didn't trust. And so we've created a lot of infrastructure in our governments about how we don't trust it, which isn't necessarily bad. So I didn't actually worry about it, because if the fire chief was saying something that was explicitly misleading, I think other people would identify that and prevent it. That's my feeling. That's not something I worry too much about. Go ahead, gentlemen.
How, after the 2011 exercise, how did the PR play out related to that gaming exercise with the people?
We had an article in the San Jose Mercury News.
Yeah, was the city playing games with our budget?
No, because I'm a bootstrap startup, right? So I can't spend $10,000 a month on PR efforts. And that's what it costs you to get really good PR. Really good PR is going to cost you $10,000 a month for 6 months. We should be in Business Week. We should be in Time Magazine. We should be in Fortune. And we're not, because I don't have someone to... I have you, right? At this place right now, this is my PR. But we'll, you know, we're going to move the world. So it's going to take a little time.
So I think the question is, but leading up to this and publicizing that this is going on...
In public...
Local media, and they're reporting of it...
The local media wasn't needed to draw people in, because the city council members drew through their districts. Like, they used their channels to reach their citizens. And I didn't want – they asked me, do you want us to go to the San Jose Mercury News and try and, like, put an ad in the paper? No. I'm like, no. I want you to do this through a serious, sober, normal communication process between the elected officials and the people that they're governing. I want it to come from them, not the Mercury News. So leading up to the event, we weren't worried about getting people in the room.
Did you have local TV there during it all?
We had some local TV. I mean, I've got an interview on CBS. I mean, it's nice, but it's not what it could be, right? And one more thing. The U.S. is way behind on this. If you go to the United Nations, participatory budgeting is practiced in far more cities around the world than in the U.S. So you had a question, my friend?
I really like this idea.
Tweet away, guys, by the way. Tweet good things about this.
I wonder, the one key aspect is, how do you overcome the perception that 100 people are deciding for a million people what they think they should be?
That's easy. This is just one one bit of the market research input into a complex budgeting process. The city did a traditional survey, of course, which cost them $40,000. But I don't want that perception. I want the perception that this is part of the tools that the city should use in engaging citizens, and it should not be the only tool. And over time, we want thousands of citizens collaborating and playing, but at the same time, we probably do want a survey that allows anonymity, and we want to be able to compare and contrast those results. So I don't think you're going to get that at all. I think the existing structures of American democracy will prevent the concept that 100 citizens, because you still have a vote. I'm not changing the voting structure. Citizens have a vote. That's right. So I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not worried about that. Maybe I should be. Maybe you guys will come back to me later and you'll send me an email like, dude, you're not thinking of it the right way, and here's why you should run for the hills in fear. But I'm not. I'm going to run to the hills called embrace and see what that looks like. But you know, I could be wrong. one more question or let you go. Your call.
Can you go back to that slide that showed the actual things that they implemented, that the city implemented?
Yeah, this is a partial thing. If you go online, you'll see more. Yep, and I'll upload this to SlideShare. And thank you so much for coming to the talk. I really appreciate it.